This is Active Lehigh Valley on 88.1 WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. Our aim is to encourage listeners to be happy, healthy, and active, and I'm your host, Mike Dravenstein. I'm here with Elliot Beadle, sports and performance dietitian nutritionist and ACSM certified exercise physiologist with St. Luke's University Health Network. And today we're going to be talking about nutrition for active lifestyles and how we can improve what we get out of our bodies based on what we put into them. Elliot, welcome to WDIY and Active Lehigh Valley.
Thank you for having me.
So Elliot, let's just start with the basics. Why is nutrition important for our bodies, especially for people who are active or looking to get more active?
So when it comes to your nutrition, we always go back to that saying, you are what you eat, and it really comes becomes important when we talk to our athletes, because our athletes are fueling a lot more than the average person, which means their energy demands are a lot higher, but also their nutrient demands are a lot higher as well. They require more protein. They require more carbohydrates throughout the day. They also have higher demands for things like iron and vitamin D and calcium. So all the nutrients we're getting from our food, we're looking at those to be increased when somebody becomes more active. So it's important for general health, but for athletes, it becomes even more important.
And I want to also make a distinction here. I mean, I think we probably have some listeners who wouldn't classify themselves as quote unquote athletes, but they are active. They're out walking several miles a day. They might be gardening for hours at a time or doing things like that. So what we're talking about today applies to them too, right?
Absolutely. When we were talking about nutrition or sports nutrition back in the day, we used to just call it sports nutrition. Now we call it performance nutrition, because when we use the term sports nutrition, people used to think that it was only for the high school and the college athletes or the ultra marathon runners. But when we throw the word performance in there, it does really open up the door to a lot more people as far as who thinks they could benefit from using this type of nutrition.
So how might the nutrition vary based on the type of activity you're pursuing, whether it's something that's very highly intense or something that involves a long, you know, stretch of endurance or something that might be a short burst, like maybe like a weightlifting or tennis? Mm-hmm. How does that vary?
So the context is a big thing when it comes to nutrition for everybody. But like we said, with our athletes, there's a wide variety of the type of activities they're going to be doing. So the body uses mainly carbohydrates and fat for energy, fats for energy at low intensity activity. Carbohydrates are used at more of a high intensity activity. And then protein is going to be more important for building muscle and maintaining lean body tissue. So depending on if the athlete is doing more of an endurance type activity, they're going to need to maybe include a little bit more dietary fat because it has more energy. And that's what their body's going to use during a longer duration run. Versus somebody who is sprinting, they're going to need to consume a little bit more carbohydrates because their body's going to be relying more on the carbs for that high intensity exercise. Versus somebody who's doing more of a strength or a power-based activity, they need to have more lean tissue. They're going to be focusing a little bit more on the protein. So depending on the type of exercise or activity that they're doing, they may need to increase the carbs or the fats or the proteins. And that's something that really has to be discussed one-on-one based off what their goals are.
And is that something where it helps to work with someone like yourself, or is it something that people can figure out just by looking at labels?
You can read a lot online, but a lot of it's going to be misinformation. So definitely working
online. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Everything you read on the internet's true, apparently. So yes, with that, working with a sports dietitian is going to be important because they can make sure that you're eating the right breakdown of the carbs, the fats, and the proteins, but also talk about things like timing and when to have the nutrients and what would the individual goals be based off of things like training volume, body weight, age, gender. A lot of factors go into that.
Let's talk a little bit about that balance between carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Is there like an ideal mixture of those? Or like you said, it depends on the activity, or what kind of proportions might we be looking at based on the different activities?
So what it goes back to is the dietary guidelines say that about 45 to 55% of your calories should come from carbohydrates. When we look at athletes who are doing more endurance type activity, they're going to be having a higher percentage of their calories coming from carbohydrates. So they may be up at 50 to 55% of their calories coming from carbs. For somebody who's doing more of a strength type activity, they're going to be down at maybe 45% of their calories coming from carbs. And when we talk about things like protein or we talk about fat, you're looking at maybe 20 to 30% of your calories coming from protein and maybe 15 to 30% of your calories coming from fat. But again, those proportions will change depending on the type of activity that you're doing. So typically for most athletes, the largest bulk of the calories comes from carbohydrates because, again, that's what your body's going to be running on for that high intensity activity.
And when people are eating different foods or taking things with carbohydrates and protein and fats, is there a balance at any given time where they interact with one another, or are there times where, hey, I'm just going to go straight carbs here or straight protein to get some sort of benefit? How does that work?
So what I tell a lot of athletes is when you are focusing on performance, we have to focus on what the body needs right then and there. So the major energy source for the body, like I said, at high intensity exercise is carbohydrates. So when we talk about what we're getting before a workout, we focus on the carbs. When we talk about what we're getting after a workout, we just exercise, we broke down muscles, we need to focus more on our protein. So it does really vary with when you're going to be eating the foods. I tell my athletes, unless you're eating for your specific activity, you want to eat a nice, healthy, balanced meal. You want to have healthy carbs, high fiber, you want to have lots of protein, you want to have non-starchy vegetables and a little bit of healthy fats. But when it comes to eating for performance, if you eat too much fat before a workout, even if it is healthier fats like avocado or olive oil, it's going to slow down digestion. Too much fiber is going to slow down digestion as well. So if you do consume too much fat or too much fiber right before a workout, then you're going to slow down your digestion. You're going to feel more sluggish during the activity. So before the workout, the major goal is to kind of top off your fuel tanks. That's when we want to make sure we're getting a little bit of the simple, easily digestible carbohydrates. So that's when you would grab just a piece of fruit or a granola bar or something like some pretzels. They have the simple carbs, but they also have some salt, which will aid in the hydration process.
How long does it take for the body to break things down and digest to get those nutrients out of the foods that you eat?
So it takes a couple hours for most foods. So things like your fats and your fiber, they do slow down the digestive process. So it's going to take a little bit longer to get the nutrients out of those. So that's why you would want to try to eat those kind of things 3 or 4 hours ahead of time so that your body has time to process the food to get it through the digestive system. So it's not hanging out in there while you're trying to exercise. But things like simple carbohydrates, your body can absorb those very, very quickly. Within half an hour to an hour, your body's able to use the carbohydrates you consumed.
So for someone like someone going on a 3 or 4 hour bike ride on the trail or a long hike or something like that, if they're fueling throughout with a simple carbohydrate, that fuel is actually making it back into the body and being used by the body. It's not just sitting there in the stomach.
Exactly right. So your carbohydrate stores inside the body are called glycogen. The average person has about an hour to an hour and a half worth of glycogen inside the body that it can use for energy during your activity. So if you're doing something that's 3 or 4 hours long, you're going to run out of your carb stores by about an hour to an hour and a half, which means your body's going to have to convert over to using fat as a fuel source. You have a lot more fat on the body, so you have a lot more accessible energy. It just takes a lot longer to get to it. So your performance is going to decrease when you switch over from using carbs to using fat. So for those longer workouts, you need to be taking in some kind of simple carbohydrates. Most people can absorb about 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrates per hour, depending on their level of training. Usually people who are better trained can tolerate a little bit more, up to maybe 60 grams of carbs per hour. But for most people, they want to start with about 20 to 30 grams of carbs per hour, and then kind of work your way up to that 60 grams per hour.
And that 2 hours sounds like a long time unless you're out running a marathon or doing a 3-hour bike ride and you start hitting the wall.
True. Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yes. A lot of people, they call it bonking when they hit the wall, because that'll happen when they're not taking the carbohydrates on. And with the carbohydrates, they're always going to be simple carbs, because anything that's more of a complex carb, it's going to take a lot longer to get digested. So we have to focus on things the body can use very quickly.
And what might be an example of a complex carbohydrate?
So a complex carb would be something like beans, legumes, whole grains like wheat bread, brown rice, whole grain pasta, potatoes, more starchy options. Those would be more of your complex carbohydrates.
Okay. I know some people who might be listening to the show are looking to get active because they have a goal. They might want to lose weight. Are there special considerations for that objective as opposed to those looking to maintain weight or just focusing on performance?
Yes. So that's one thing I do talk to a lot of athletes about when it comes to health versus performance. So health may be trying to lose weight where we don't need to consume as many carbohydrates. We don't need to eat as much before, during, and after our workouts. We can do those types of things in maybe a semi-fasted state where we don't eat before a workout. Then we force our body to rely on fat as a fuel source, and that can actually aid in the weight loss process versus somebody who wants to gain weight, they need to be consuming more calories, more energy throughout the day. Or somebody who's focusing on performance, they need to be eating before, probably during, and then after their workouts because their body needs the energy. So it really depends on, is your goal to lose weight or is your goal to perform at the optimal level? Some people will naturally lose weight when they start to exercise just because they are burning a lot more calories and they're increasing their muscle mass and they're becoming more metabolically efficient. But for some people, they won't necessarily lose weight because if they're eating enough to maintain performance, they're going to be consuming more calories than their body needs to lose weight.
Got it. How about people who might be looking to gain weight or get stronger, build muscle mass? What kind of nutrition or dietary guidelines might we be looking at there?
So for most people trying to gain weight, the recommendation is to consume about 300 to 500 calories above maintenance every day if they want to build muscle, assuming that if we eat about 3,500 calories a week, we'll put on maybe 0.5 to 1 pound of muscle at a time. A lot of people think that when it comes to building muscle, all they need to do is increase their protein intake, but we also need to increase the amount of carbohydrates we're consuming and the amount of fat we're consuming because the body needs energy to build muscle. So the protein will give you more of the structure when it comes to building the muscle tissue, but your body also needs more energy in general if it wants to build the tissues in the first place. So it should be a nice combination of carbs, fats, and proteins all increasing. And they really should be trying to eat more often throughout the day. When you eat protein, your body increases its muscle protein synthesis. So if we eat protein in larger quantities just twice a day, we're not really giving a body the best ability to build muscle versus breaking up your protein intake throughout the day. If you eat protein in small amounts every couple hours, 4 to 6 times a day, you're going to consistently increase your muscle protein synthesis, which will help with building that muscle mass better.
So having that handful of nuts at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm looking to build muscle mass, good thing, right?
Absolutely. It's very calorie dense. Yeah. It's got some nice healthy fats. It's got protein. So that's a very important thing when you're trying to build muscle.
Okay.
Also, with the end of the day feeding, having some protein before you go to bed is going to be important if you're trying to build muscle as well. When you go to sleep, that's when your body starts to really build tissue, so you release more growth hormone for recovering and repairing and building new muscle tissue overnight. So if you do consume some protein before you go to bed, it's going to have a much bigger effect for the muscle building versus anything else.
Okay. Elliot, you mentioned that the maintenance level of calories. What is that general maintenance level? How does it vary based on your weight and your age?
So we do a calculation for this. This is something you can, again, look up online, but there are calculations that tell you based off of your height, weight, age, and gender, we determine what is your resting metabolic rate. And then for your activity, depending on how much you do every day or throughout the week, we add an activity factor to tell us how many calories you need to be consuming to maintain. What we know is that if you're taller, if you weigh more, your energy demands are higher. As we age, our energy demands do go down. Now, what we find is that a lot of times the decrease in your metabolic rate is because people are typically less active when they are getting older, but also people do tend to lose more muscle as they get older. And we find that the decrease in the muscle mass tends to be a bigger factor when it comes to a decrease in your metabolic rate. So people who are more active, and if they're able to maintain a higher muscle mass, will have a higher metabolic rate than somebody who doesn't have as much muscle mass on them.
Okay, so we see these dietary guidelines, you know, intake of 2,000 to 2,500 a day. That there's a lot of variables in there, right?
Absolutely. And what I find is a lot of times individuals are either undercutting themselves, trying to lose weight. So they don't really know how many calories their body needs at rest. They're just automatically cutting down to 1,200 calories a day because they heard somebody lost weight on that. But then they're severely restricting their protein intake. They're not getting enough fat. They're not getting enough fiber. And that's where I see a lot of people struggling to lose weight. Even though they're restricting, they're going too low on their calories. And that's why it's important to work with a dietitian to figure out what is your metabolic rate, your estimated metabolic rate, so that we can figure out how many calories do you actually need to consume to lose weight. Because if you over diet, it's going to make it a lot harder to lose weight in the first place, but also keep it off, because the further you restrict, the more your metabolism tends to change as you lose the weight.
Well, that's great. Well, Elliot, we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to come back to Active Lehigh Valley in just a moment.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. We're talking today with Elliot Beadle, who is a sports and performance dietitian nutritionist at St. Luke's. Elliot, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we were talking a bit about metabolism before the break, and is there a general guideline on how your metabolism changes as you age?
No, it really depends on factors like your muscle mass, depends on how active you are. So they used to say that for every decade, I believe your metabolism went down like 5 to 10%. There was a number they had for that. But when they looked at the research again, they determined that your metabolism doesn't decrease that much on its own when it comes to aging. Like, as I kind of mentioned before, it's the decrease in the muscle mass, and it's the more sedentary lifestyles which tends to decrease somebody's metabolism. If somebody is more active and they are maintaining a higher muscle mass, their metabolism does tend to be pretty well maintained until you get to about the age of like 60 or 70. Once you do get higher in the age range, it does go down a little bit quicker. But for most middle-aged individuals, if you're active, your metabolism doesn't drop that much.
Okay, but when you do hit middle age, if you're not active and you're not building muscle mass, you will see more of a drop off more quickly because your body just isn't building it itself.
Absolutely. And that's something I really emphasize with a lot of individuals is you should always try to have as much lean muscle tissue as possible because your muscle tissue is metabolically active, which means it's going to be burning more calories naturally throughout the day. So if you have more muscle mass, you're going to be burning more calories no matter what.
Are there certain foods that we should be avoiding at all costs?
So alcohol is a big one. We know that it does affect your cardiovascular system. It affects your central nervous system. It decreases your fat metabolism. It decreases your body's ability to build muscle. So alcohol is a big one. So limiting alcohol as much as possible is going to be a good thing to consider. But also energy drinks. I know we want to talk about those a little bit more too. Those tend to be a really big concern because of the caffeine content, the sugar content, and also the other stimulants that are included in them, which will enhance the effects of the caffeine in the body.
Talking about those energy drinks, energy is kind of a pseudonym or a friendly word for the caffeine and for the sugar and everything that's in there. And how much caffeine is in there?
It really depends on the one you choose. You look at something like a regular Red Bull, it's going to be 80 milligrams of caffeine. You look at a Celsius, it's going to be 200 milligrams of caffeine. You can get 300 milligrams of caffeine, 400 milligrams of caffeine. So it really varies depending on the one you choose. Another important thing to know about energy drinks is that they're considered supplements by the Food and Drug Administration, so they don't get regulated before they get to the market. So even though it may say it has 100 milligrams of caffeine on the label, it might have 150, it might have 200 milligrams of caffeine. You don't actually know that because those are not regulated before they get to the shelf.
That's good to know. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. How about refined sugar? We're talking about, candies or Coca-Cola or gummy bears or things like that. I mean, it's kind of a joke among endurance athletes, hey, like whether it's not starting to bonk, but, getting close to the end of a race there, people are popping just about anything. And you see some of these ultra marathoners, they get to an aid station and anything with sugar that's easy to digest, they're putting it down.
And it is true. Your body will need that when you're exercising a lot more. So it's going to use that a lot more efficiently versus somebody who's not active. So for somebody who's just sitting around watching TV at night, somebody who is not exercising a lot, the consumption of those simple refined carbs is going to spike your blood sugar. It's going to release more insulin inside the body. It's going to be very inflammatory inside your body, which is going to lead to the progression of a lot of chronic diseases. So for somebody who's non-active, absolutely, they want to be minimizing those refined sugars as much as they can. But for somebody who's more active, they can tolerate those a little bit more because your body's able to use those right away. And if it can use them right away, it's not going to cause the spike in the blood sugar. It's not going to cause the massive insulin release. Your body's actually going to remove the sugar from the blood a lot quicker, so it doesn't tend to have as detrimental of an effect throughout the system.
It's more quick fuel than something's going to sit around for a little bit.
Correct. So when you think about something like a Gatorade, it's just really simply glucose and fructose. It's very simple sugars, but it's the sugars your body can use during the workouts. So consuming those, it's not necessarily the, quote unquote, healthiest option, but it will give the body the fuel it needs if you're exercising. So I tell everyone, we talk about carbs. We have our simple carbs and our complex carbs. It's not good carbs versus bad carbs. It's quickly digested carbs versus slowly digested carbs, and there's a time and a place. So for breakfast, if you're not going to be going out for a run right afterwards, have your bowl of oatmeal, have your whole grain toast. But if you're going to be waking up and going out for a run, then yeah, you can grab a slice of white bread because it's going to be those easily digested carbohydrates. Or during a workout, you can have some jelly beans because that's what your body's going to use for it. And some people's bodies do tolerate those a little bit better. It tends to decrease the GI upset for some of those really simple refined carbs.
Got it. Okay. How about for people who live a vegetarian or vegan lifestyle, what considerations should they be looking at to make sure their bodies are getting what they need?
So protein is going to be a big factor there. They can get plenty of plant-based protein sources, but if they're not focusing on, you know, getting a protein source at every meal, if not including a lot of beans, legumes, and nuts, and seeds, and tofu, if they're not consuming those, then they do run the risk of protein deficiency, which will impair their body's ability to build and maintain muscle mass. And then we talk about things like B12. That's mainly found in your animal products. So if they're not consuming any animal products, they could be deficient in B12, or calcium if they're not consuming dairy, or iron if they're not eating a lot of meats. So they can still get those kind of nutrients from supplements and other foods, but they need to make sure if they're not drinking dairy, then they're having a calcium fortified plant-based milk, or if they're not having a lot of meat, then making sure that they're getting a lot of green leafy vegetables for the iron. So they can still get the nutrients, they just have to be a lot more specific with what they're eating. They have to eat a really well-balanced diet. They should be a vegetarian, not just eating a lot of carbohydrates, not just eating a lot of breads and rices and pastas. They should eat a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, a lot of plants is the main thing they want to look for.
And how about things like supplements? Energy drinks certainly sort of are classified as a supplement, yes. But mm-hmm. you know, whether they're vitamins or protein powders or mm-hmm. things like that, are those things that are necessary? Are they kind of gimmicky, or do they have their place?
They can be very gimmicky. So with the supplements, if it's a new supplement that's never been used before, it does have to go through the FDA now. But if it's got supplement in it that's been used one time in history and there's been at least one research article on it, it doesn't need to be verified by the FDA. So a lot of times they're finding an herb from Africa or from Asia or a tree bark from South America, and they're adding those kind of things in. And when you look at the research, a lot of it says may benefit human performance, may add muscle mass, may do this, may do that.
Well, one whole study.
Yes. So there's not a lot of great research on all the different herbs and supplements and things like that that you're finding a lot of the workouts. The ones that have been really well researched are things like fish oil to decrease inflammation, your sodium bicarbonate to decrease your lactic acid buildup when you're exercising at high intensity. Creatine is a very well-researched supplement when it comes to building muscle mass, increasing high-intensity exercise output, and improving cognitive function. So those are really the three big ones that a lot of people are considering. And those are just one single supplement, one single ingredient, versus you see these sports supplements that have 20 different ingredients. And a lot of times they use proprietary blends, which means they will lump all their supplements together and they'll call it like a power matrix or a caffeine booster. And that way they can just tell you it has 5 grams of everything, but not tell you how much of each ingredient's in there. So I always tell people to be leery of the proprietary blends, because you don't really know how much of your ingredients are actually in them.
So if they talk about a blend and there's a little trademark sign after it, it's a little bit of a yellow light, huh? Caution flag.
Absolutely. So I do encourage everyone, if you can get your supplements third-party tested, that does help out a lot, just to make sure that what's on the label is what's in the supplement, because it could be they're trying to make it cheaper, so they're using inferior products. It could be they're adding additional things like stimulants or hormone boosters because they want you to see better benefits, even though it may not be the most ethical thing in the world. They're going to be selling more products because you're building more muscle when you're taking their protein powder. So if you can have something that's been tested by Informed Sport or NSF for Sport, those are two good third-party testing options.
So Elliot, what are some of the biggest misperceptions that you've heard over the years when you're talking with some of your clients about nutrition?
So the first one is that when it comes to protein, a lot of people say that we can only absorb about 30 grams of protein at one time. In reality, your body can absorb a lot of protein. You can absorb 50, 60, 70 grams of protein at one time. It's just how much protein can your body use at one time for building muscle for that point. So with most people, they can absorb, like I said, absorb 60 to 70 grams of protein, but they can only use half of that for building muscle. So instead of having all of your protein at your lunch and your dinner, if we can spread our protein intake throughout the day, we can use that protein a lot more efficiently. So I always encourage everyone, every time you eat, you want to try to get some protein, whether it is your animal-based protein sources like chicken, beef, fish, or pork, if it's your low-fat dairy like milks, yogurts, or cheeses, if it's nuts, if it's seeds, or for convenience, if it is a good, reputable protein bar or protein shake, then that would be a fine option.
How is nutrition science evolving? You know, if we maybe look back 40 or 50 years ago at what some of the recommendations were there? Do we find that we've been evolving over time, or were we misguided back in the day and now we're brilliant? And then 50 years from now, we're going to say, what were they thinking back in 2025? I mean, how has this evolved over time?
So what we found now through the research is that what people have been doing for years has actually been very successful. We just now have the research to agree with that, to approve it. So talking about how many carbohydrates somebody needs to be consuming per hour, or the benefits of doing fasted cardio for increasing your body's ability to burn fat. People were doing that 50, 60 years ago. They just didn't really have a research to back it up. They were just doing it on their own. The coaches knew that, the athletes knew it, and they were doing it. What we're doing nowadays is kind of just proving that what they were doing many years ago was the right thing to do. And we found it has kind of flip-flopped back and forth, where it was carbs are the best and we need more carbs. And then it was carbs are evil, so we have to eat more fat. And then we have to eat more carbs. And we're just kind of flip-flopping back and forth. So we are finding that history does tend to repeat itself a lot. And we're really going back to the idea that we don't want to overly restrict carbs. We don't want to be necessarily doing a high-fat diet when it comes to performance. We want to focus more on our carbohydrates if we want to perform optimally for what we're looking for.
And what suggestions would you have for evolving your nutrition if you're looking, maybe admittedly don't have the best diet right now and want to start eating better and eating more nutritiously? What's a good way to start doing that, and how do you progress on that over time?
So the first thing to do is to do a self-evaluation and see, what are you eating? When are you eating? How much are you eating? So keeping a little food journal is not a bad idea. You don't have to download an app for your phone and start tracking every single calorie you're consuming, but just write things down throughout the day and see, are you eating consistently? Are you having items too late at night? Are you having the bulk of your calories after dinner? Are you tending to eat more junk food because you're feeling more stressed throughout the day? So writing things down in the first place is always a good benefit for most people. That way they can do more of a self-evaluation. And then we can look more into, are you having a healthy, balanced, nutritious diet? Are you getting more fruits and vegetables? Are you consuming more whole foods and whole grains? Are you including healthy fats at your meals? Are you spreading your protein intake throughout the day? The more you have your own self-evaluation, the more you can see what you need to work on.
I've read articles too that just that self-evaluation brings a level of awareness that intuitively has an effect where people either limit what they do, or they're more cognizant of what they're eating because they need to be accountable to themselves.
Absolutely. They find that subconsciously, individuals do tend to eat healthier when they keep a journal, because they want to see better things written down. But then also, when you start to see it, that encourages you to make better food choices and to be more mindful of what you're putting in your body. So again, it never hurts to do that, but that can only take you so far. And then you might want to meet with a dietitian or a sports dietitian to talk about, here's what I'm doing, how can I improve it a little bit more?
And are there apps that can help with that too?
Yes.
Where you can take pictures of things and estimate the size?
So there are new ones that have the ability to just take a picture, and it'll give you a breakdown of, here's how much carbs, fats, and protein it has, and here's how many calories it has. You can download MyFitnessPal, you can download Carb Manager or Lose It. And then we actually have an app that we're using called Teamworks Nutrition. So it's I tell everyone it's like MyFitnessPal for athletes specifically, where they are able to set up an account through me. I help determine what are their calorie, carb, fat, and protein goals. And then they can actually have meal plans provided to them through that app, which will tell them what they should eat, when they should eat, and how much.
So Eli, we have about a minute left. What are some of the benefits of working with someone like you, a certified nutritionist?
So we can really determine, as I mentioned before, how much you need to be eating throughout the day. A bigger concern for most athletes is not fueling their body enough, because they are a lot more active. They are burning a lot of calories. They don't understand how much they actually need to be consuming. And then a lot of times they're not eating properly before their workout, so they're hitting the wall. They're not eating properly after the workout, so they're not building muscle. So working with a sports dietitian, we can talk about how to eat properly throughout the day, how to meet your energy demands, but also how to fuel your workouts, how to recover properly, how to maintain your hydration. We can go into very specific details of what it takes to be the best athlete or best active individual they can be,
based on their activity and body type.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, we were speaking with Elliot Beadle from St. Luke's, who is a sports and performance dietitian nutritionist. Elliot, thanks for joining us here at WDIY.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And again, thanks to St. Luke's University Health Network, who encourages us to be happy, healthy, and active. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is Active Lehigh Valley.